You're going to love this. Just love it.
I don't know. I just don't know.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you.
From Pacifica Radio's KPFK in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on 90.7 FM in LA. Up in Oregon, 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Central Coast, and 106.7 FM KSO in Cozy Cottage Grove. Out in Pennsylvania on 93 FM WLRI in lovely Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Out in Hawaii, 88.5 FM KAKU, the voice of Maui. And of course, coast to coast and around the globe on kpfk.org. Streaming on the Progressive Voices channel. On Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, Radio or Not, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR Nashville, and of course, Radio Sputnik 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around likable chap, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us today for another thrilling action-packed adventure, and we have a bit of a mystery today, a bit of a mystery show that has been going on for a while, and today we have a solution to that mystery and an explanation, sort of, for that mystery. We'll get to that in a moment. But by way of setting some of it up, let me share with you this story out of Ohio. A veteran newspaper reporter who was promoted to editor of Bowling Green, Ohio's daily newspaper in 2013 was fired on Monday for insubordination after allowing staffers at the Bowling Green Sentinel Tribune to read an editorial that she wrote, as was her normal practice. This editorial was about the National Rifle Association and responsible gun ownership, the Toledo Blade newspaper reported this week, obviously out of Toledo, Ohio, reporting on what's going on next door in Bowling Green at the Bowling Green Sentinel Tribune, where the editor of that paper was fired. Jan Larson McLaughlin told the Blade that she didn't, the Toledo Blade, that she didn't think she was fired for writing the editorial, but for attempting to talk with publisher Carmen Concannon about how to proceed after Concannon rejected her editorial. McLaughlin, the editor, said it's, or the former editor now, said it's a ridiculous reason to get rid of someone who has been there for 31 years. 31 years she has been at the paper. She said, I truly love the Sentinel Tribune, and it's just very sad to me to see what's happening to it, that it's been chipped away at, particularly in the newsroom. She said, I knew that the particular editorial, the one about the NRA, was dead, but I needed to know how to proceed from there, McLaughlin told the Toledo Blade. She said, I needed some direction. She, Concannon, the publisher of the newspaper, of the Bowling Green Sentinel Tribune, the publisher and the VP of that paper, she refused to talk to me after the editorial. She said, the newsroom was standing behind me. The newsroom standing behind me was just the last straw of me constantly pushing to be a better newspaper, to be who we are supposedly supposed to be in the community. Ms. Concannon, the publisher, whose parents, Thomas and Catherine Haswell, own the daily newspaper in Bowling Green, did not return the Blade's call seeking comment. So the publisher spikes this editorial about the NRA. the publisher whose parents purchased the paper, whose parents are the owner of the paper. And then they go and fire the editor who has been there for more than 30 years, fire her because she had the temerity to show the rejected NRA editorial to everyone else in the newsroom and say, what do we do now? Where do we go from here? The unpublished editorial was obtained by the Toledo Blade. It urged gun owners not to let the powerful lobbying arm of the NRA continue to control gun policy in America. It said, quote, the NRA has not always been the paranoid, pry the gun from my cold, dead hands organization that it is now. It was formerly an association aimed at serving its membership by providing safety classes, marksmanship training, and even gun control support. But somewhere it got hijacked from its real purpose to its fanatical presence. It's time for reasonable gun owners to say enough is enough. So nothing particularly controversial, or at least nothing particularly untrue about this editorial, but the publisher, who is the daughter of the owners of this newspaper, spiked the editorial and then fired the editor, who had been there for more than 30 years, for daring to talk about it. All of that, I share that with you. That was this week that happened. Very troubling in Ohio. But a similar situation appears to be developing in Nevada at the state's largest newspaper, the Las Vegas Review-Journal, where we've had a mystery over the past week about who it was who secretly purchased that Nevada paper, the Las Vegas Review-Journal, for way too much money, by the way. One week ago, they paid $140 million for the paper. It's about $40 million more than was spent to buy the same paper just months earlier this year. This is a very disturbing development, frankly, in a state like Nevada, which plays a key role in both of the presidential nominating processes, much less the general election, where it's notoriously a swing state. It's the third state for Democrats in their primary cycle in 2016 after Iowa and New Hampshire. It's the fourth state for Republicans. But the mystery of who secretly purchased that paper is now solved. And the answer to that mystery is frankly quite disturbing. So I'm going to be joined by Salvatore Cullalori of Media Matters for America to discuss that shortly, to reveal the secret owner of that paper. And why it's, frankly, quite troubling. We'll be discussing that shortly. Also, Desi Doyen and the Green News Report will be here. Hi, Desi.
Hello.
Your microphone's off. You want to try that again?
Yeah, that's really helpful.
Some producer you are. Hi, Desi.
I'm good.
You'll be back with us in a bit about, with the Green News Report to discuss the Tuesday debate in Las Vegas, where they just decided, what was it, a national security debate, and yet they decided a national security and foreign policy, and yet CNN did not ask one question concerning the climate change treaty that was struck just 3 days earlier, the largest treaty ever.
Pretty much the most comprehensive treaty ever reached, I think, probably only rivaling the Geneva Conventions. But yeah, sort of a global international treaty, 150 world leaders. Yeah, why would you want to ask about that?
Well, 150 world leaders, but almost 200 countries are a party to this agreement. This is quite huge. And obviously it has to do with national security, foreign relations. CNN didn't bring it up, even though it happened just 3 days earlier, which is kind of amazing to me. Also, in our Green News Report coming up with Desi Doyen later in the show, November is now the 7 month in a row to smash heat records across the globe.
Yeah.
Just that. Yeah, nothing to worry about. Also, don't ask about that climate change agreement at the GOP debate. Man, unbelievable. And now 2015 on track to be the hottest record in year on record globally, following 2014, that was the previous hottest. So there you go. Also, the Democrats have now made a deal with Republicans to resume oil exports that haven't. U.S. has not exported oil for
crude oil
for decades. So what did the Democrats get in return? Well, you'll have to stay tuned to find out.
Dun dun dun.
To our Green News Report, all of that and more is ahead. There was a couple of before we get to. Sal Calalori. There was a couple of items that we did not get to specifically that I wanted to hit from the GOP debate this week. We'll see if I can get to a few of them here before we have to take a break and get to Sal. But one of them concerned Hugh Hewitt. He's the right-wing radio talk show host on Salem Radio, which is a huge right-wing outlet that owns a whole bunch of radio stations. Yes, our public airwaves. They own the leases on those, and they allow only right-wing points of view, one of them being Hugh Hewitt's. That's all that's heard. 24/7 wing nuttery around the clock on Salem's chain of radio stations. So I didn't get to talk about this yesterday, but specifically the question that was asked to Donald Trump about would he promise to keep his pledge to not run as an independent. It was asked by Hugh Hewitt, who was allowed to ask questions in this CNN debate. This man, who is, I guess, regarded as a journalist, at least by CNN, who asked him to come along and ask questions of the Republican candidates in Las Vegas on Tuesday. CNN was partnering with Salem Media in this. And when he asked the question to Donald Trump said, yeah, yes, I'm not going to run as an independent. I finally pledged that. And Hugh Hewitt actually applauded. He said, oh, I'm going to applaud that. And he was actually clapping, which is just amazing. Just amazing that would happen as Ed Schultz, who now has a, I think it's just a podcast at WeGotEd.com. He's no longer on MSNBC or on the radio. He used to be on the radio. And by way of transparency, full disclosure here, I have guest hosted the Ed Schultz show back when he had his 3-hour nationally syndicated show. In any event, he now puts out a podcast, news and commentary, and he commented on this situation with Hugh Hewitt and Donald Trump on his podcast today.
Watching the debate the other night, I've noticed that I like to watch the moderators. I like to listen to the questions. And you'll notice that CNN has partnered with the Salem Radio Network to do these debates. And one of the moderators is a right-wing hack. He thinks he's a journalist. He isn't. And that's Hugh Hewitt. And who is the Salem Radio Network? Well, the Salem Radio Network is just 24/7 filled with right-wing garbage. They hate liberals. They have beaten up Obama unmercifully. And, of course, they hate Hillary Clinton. So CNN, I don't know why they feel like they have to partner with a right-wing network. They never partnered with Air America on anything. And so now it's CNN, and the Salem Radio Networks are bringing you these debates on CNN. And oh, by the way, one of our moderators asking the questions tonight is Hugh Hewitt. Jeff Zucker, who's your liberal counterpart to this? Who's your liberal hack up there asking the questions? Why is it that nobody from our side gets an opportunity to do something like that? I don't need the job and I don't want it. There's other things in the works, of course. But the point here is that Bernie Sanders for a long time has complained about the corporate media. And CNN is supposed to be this middle of the road, this journalistic engine in American news. Really? What are you partnering with the Salem Radio Network for? And what the hell is Hugh Hewitt doing clapping like that when Donald Trump says that he's not going to run as an independent? Here's the exchange.
Are you ready to reassure Republicans tonight that you will run as a Republican and abide by the decision of the Republicans?
I really am. I'll be honest. I really am. I mean, people have been putting me the question. I really am.
I could applaud. Dr. Carson.
I would love to have the opportunity to be on CNN, I guess. So I could clap when Bernie Sanders rips him a new one for not giving fair coverage in the corporate media, just selling out to Trump and to Hillary. I mean, wouldn't that be entertaining? You know, it's don't give me this garbage that the media is fair, even CNN. There is a right-wing bent in the corporate media all across the board. And you're not going to see any liberals asking any questions or being propped up the way Hugh Hewitt is being propped up.
No, you absolutely are not going to see that. And if you did see it, the right wing would throw a conniption fit If that ever dared happen, if you ever saw someone like, oh, well, if you ever saw someone like me, and I'm not even a Democrat, but Hugh Hewitt is clearly a Republican, you know, so it just won't happen. You won't see an Ed Schultz. You won't see me. And by the way, he referenced Jeff Zucker in that comment and said, where is the liberal counterpoint to the Hugh Hewitts asking questions at a debate? Jeff Zucker is the head of CNN. And yeah, you had a thought?
Well, just clearly, I think that in this case, CNN is using Hugh Hewitt as a human shield, essentially preventing the right wingers from attacking CNN for their coverage. Because, yeah. Well, look, we have a right winger right here.
Oh, yeah, so
he's a human shield.
So we couldn't possibly be in the tank. You know, they used to call it CNN, the Clinton News Network. I suspect that's what they're going to start doing again. It doesn't matter how they are not the Clinton News Network, how they are not liberal, the liberal media, how they definitely lean right, as this episode underscores again. The right wing is going to pretend and tell all their chump stooges, suckers, and patsies who buy into all the nonsense that, oh, don't believe a word the liberal media says, only believe us. Everyone else is liberal. Anyway, I just wanted to hit that very quickly because it underscores this is why it's important who runs the news media, who owns your media outlets, who owns it, who runs it, all of which brings us back to that mystery in Las Vegas that I mentioned. And we're going to take a quick break and come back and reveal the answer to that mystery with Salvatore Calalori of Media Matters. Straight ahead, I'm Brad Friedman. Stay tuned.
I read the news today, oh boy.
Oh boy, indeed. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Wow, a really bizarre story that has been unfolding in Nevada. As I detailed on yesterday's program in our post-debate coverage of the CNN GOP debate this week in Las Vegas at billionaire GOP megafunder Sheldon Adelson's Venetian Hotel and Casino, Adelson and his wife Miriam were the single biggest outside spenders on the 2012 presidential election. The GOP primary that year went on and on for much longer than it might have otherwise, thanks to Adelson shelling out millions to Newt Gingrich during that primary in order to keep Rick Santorum, who Adelson hated for some reason, from being able to compete against Mitt Romney. Make sense? All right. In all, it doesn't matter. In all, as the Demos organization notes, the global casino baron Adelson and his wife shelled out some $91.8 million, almost $100 million to Republicans in 2012. Now, that sounds like a lot of money, but that's just about 0.37% of their personal worth. In other words, that nearly $100 million that they donated to Republicans that year, that's the equivalent of you or me as just average Americans giving just $285 to one of the two major parties. So it would take, as Demos notes, some 322,000 American families donating $285 each in order to match the amount that the Adelsons gave on their own in 2012. So, you know, it seems like a lot of money, but really it's $285 is all they gave, that $100 million that they actually gave back in 2012. Well, over the past week, as I said, there's been this bizarre mystery brewing in Nevada, in Las Vegas specifically, about who the hell bought the Las Vegas Review-Journal, the largest newspaper in the state of Nevada. It's the largest newspaper in Las Vegas, which also makes it the largest in the entire state, because other than Vegas, Nevada's pretty sparsely populated. So the big paper in Vegas is the big paper for the state. Well, who bought it? Who bought that Las Vegas Review-Journal about a week ago for $140 million? We did not know until today. as reported by the Las Vegas Review-Journal itself, who their reporters did not even know who had purchased the paper. They had reported the Las Vegas Review-Journal was purchased last week by News and Media Capital Group, LLC, a newly formed Delaware-domiciled company backed by, quote, undisclosed financial backers with expertise in the media industry. News and media manager Michael Schroeder had declined to disclose the company's investors, as has Review Journal publisher Jason Taylor. Now, remember, this is the Review Journal itself reporting this, trying to figure out who now owns them. News and Media paid $140 million for the newspaper and its sister publications, around $38 million more than New Media Investment Group paid in March for all of Stevens Media LLC, a national chain of eight daily newspapers that included the Review Journal. As a Delaware LLC, limited liability corporation, News and Media is not required to list its owners in any public document. So they paid this huge inflated price, $38 million more than the previous group had paid for this same paper and a whole bunch of others back in March, but they wouldn't disclose who they were. The Vegas Review-Journal goes on to note the inflated purchase price has fueled speculation and denials surrounding the newspaper's new owners, much of which has centered on Adelson. Sheldon Adelson, the Republican Party mega donor, pledging $100 million in donations to GOP candidates in the 2012 cycle. He is also actively involved in Israeli politics, they note. Well, now Las Vegas Review-Journal, through their excellent reporting, has been able to figure out who actually owns them. Reporting today, the Review Journal says the son-in-law of billionaire casino owner Sheldon Adelson arranged the $140 million purchase of the Las Vegas Review-Journal on Adelson's behalf, according to sources on Wednesday. Patrick Dumont, who is listed on the website of the Las Vegas Sands Corporation as the company's senior vice president of finance and strategy, put together the deal at the behest of his father-in-law, Sheldon Adelson, the chairman and CEO of Las Vegas Sands Corp. Dumont, a 41-year-old from New York, in 2009 married Sivan Ashorn, a daughter of Adelson's wife, Dr. Miriam Adelson, from a previous marriage. Sivan Ashorn Dumont runs the Israel paper Israel Hayom, which is owned by the casino mogul as well. And that paper is regarded by many, frankly, to be little more than a tool for the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his Likud party. Another source familiar with the deal, and I'm still amazed they have to go through this. This is the same paper reporting, trying to talk to sources to figure out who owns them. Another source familiar with the deal said Sheldon Adelson, 15th on the Forbes 400 list of billionaires with a net worth of $24.5 billion, funded the transaction. Even though Adelson told CNN on Tuesday night that he has, quote, no personal interest in the Review Journal's new owner. Really? Well, that appears to be a lie. Fortune magazine on Wednesday cited multiple sources familiar with the situation, reporting that Adelson was the newspaper's, quote, primary buyer. And today, in the Vegas Review-Journal, the company issued a statement saying, "We are proud to announce that the Adelson family has purchased the Las Vegas Review-Journal through a wholly owned fund as both a financial investment as well as an investment in the future of the Las Vegas community." Here to talk about all of this and why it's so troubling, at least according to Eric Hananoki over at Media Matters, is Salvatore Cullalori of Media Matters. He's the program director for Media Matters' state media team. Sal Cullalori, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hey, thank you for having me on.
Really appreciate it. This is This is so strange. I want to run through some of what you guys cited over at Media Matters as four reasons that the Adelson purchase is troubling. I suspect y'all could have come up with even more, but let's walk through with what you guys are citing as your major concerns for a start. And then we'll go through another number of other questions I have about this bizarre situation. So the first point that you note, that Adelson says, I don't like journalism. That's kind of troubling on its own. But then you talk about Adelson as a GOP mega donor. Why is it disturbing for a GOP mega donor to own the largest newspaper in Nevada?
Well, as we've seen with other mega donors who have purchased newspapers, those newspapers tend to take a spin in favor of the owner's perspective. So we've seen this a couple of times with the Anschutz family, who owns the Oklahoman, and also there was a mega donor in San Diego who bought the San Diego Union Tribune, and then renamed it UT San Diego. Mm-hmm. Both of those papers ended up taking on the stances of their owners. The Las Vegas Review-Journal was actually a very conservative, at least editorial board, going into this. Mm-hmm. But it seemed to shy away from foreign policy, and in terms of domestic policy, had a pretty standard stance. With this, it's not really clear what way or what influence Adelson's going to have on his newspaper. But like you said, in sort of the talk up to this, the other newspapers that he owns have very, very distinct stances that are very much in line with him. And owning the biggest newspaper in the state gives him a major mouthpiece going into not only the 2016 election, but with the big Senate election coming up in Nevada. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of opportunities for him to use his newspaper to throw his weight around. And depending on how aggressive he wants to get with it, the coverage of candidates could really be significantly impacted.
And Nevada is a very, very important swing state, not only in the general election, but also in, as you mentioned, in those primaries coming up, the presidential primaries next year. Basically, it's Iowa and then New Hampshire for both Republicans and Democrats. And then the third state on the list is Nevada, the Nevada caucus for the Democrats. The Republicans go down to South Carolina for their third one, but then they come back to Nevada for their fourth contest. So it's Nevada is number three for Democrats, number four for Republicans. What happens in Vegas, as they say, doesn't just stay in Vegas. In this case, it's very key to the Republican primary to the presidential primary on both sides of the aisle, Republican and Democratic.
Absolutely, and I think, when you look at it, he has pretty much said he's in the tank for Rubio. We write this in the piece. When something like that happens, and when you see somebody who's already, picked a candidate and now they run a newspaper, I can only imagine the sort of stuff that's going to come out of there that's going to either be pro-Rubio or significantly attacking the other Republican candidates. And clearly, Adelson is a GOP donor primarily. So some of the stuff that might come out of the paper, again, attacking Democrats, it's just not going to be fair. And I think that's the point here is, when you read the media, you expect a level of fairness, you expect a level of accuracy. Given his track record and his history and his donating, a lot of people are not really sure that there's going to be some fairness and equity going on at the paper with him at the helm.
Now, I want to talk about that in a little bit, actually, because obviously there's a history of, let's do it now, actually, before we get to the other. I know there's three or four other things that you guys listed, but, when you mention the political angle and the expectation of fairness by a newspaper, well, do we really have that fairness? I mean, we've got a long history, certainly in this country, of, yellow journalism, as they used to call it. You see William Randolph Hearst's empire. Of course, now Rupert Murdoch and his empire. I mean, is this purchase really any more disturbing than Rupert Murdoch buying and then, largely ruining the Wall Street Journal, for example?
Well, I think in some cases it actually is because, prior to today, Adelson could have potentially, well, at least he tried to go under the radar for a significant period of time and maybe divorce himself from this so that even though he purchased the paper and would potentially be using it as his own personal paper, you know, he didn't want his name associated with it in this way. Otherwise, you wouldn't go through all the steps that he went through to do that. You would just purchase the paper. So I think it almost shows a bit of a nefarious sort of motive here. And, you know, and when it comes to paper's fairness, at the end of the day, the editorial board is allowed to do what the editorial board wants to do. You know, I mean, in Media Matters, we expect at least accuracy, but you can have a conservative perspective, and we understand that. But the real concern, I think, it comes when you look at reporting, depending on hirings and firings, the way that the reporting works, and, you know, that's what I was trying to say in the opening a little bit, too, is that the reporting at the Las Vegas Journal, you know, hasn't been terrible. And so I guess, you know, we'll see as we go on here if it starts to slant, if there is pressure from above. And I think the American people should have the perspective or the, you know, sort of the idea that media should be accurate and should be fair. You know, we have a lot of people in media now who don't actually do that, but at the same time,
think?
I think that should be an it should be the expectation. But then again, that's why we're here, right? Is because Media Matters there to, mm-hmm. to correct the misinformation in the media. So I guess we'd be out of jobs if everything was all accurate.
Well,
fair,
that's
then, right?
True. That's true. So this is obviously good for Media Matters, I guess.
Yes, it is in some ways. I mean, you know, self-interestedly, I actually, you know, I've been following Las Vegas Review Journal for quite some time now.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just going to increase my workload a little bit here.
Yeah, apparently. All right. Well, now the second point that Media Matters raise has to do with Adelson's business practices. And this is something that occurs to me that, frankly, this could be as much of a reason for buying the paper for Adelson as anything else. He has a lot of very disturbing business dealings in both in Nevada and in China specifically, where he's the owner of the, I think it's the world's largest casino in Macau. And there are questions about his involvement with high level Chinese organized crime groups out there.
Yeah, so, you know, a couple of reports have come out about his shady business dealings. He does have issues already in the United States of America. I actually personally find the Macau one pretty interesting because he apparently took about $700,000 and tried to bribe a legislator, calling it legal fees.
A Chinese legislator?
Yeah, okay. A Macau legislator, sorry,
gotcha.
Yes. And, you know, this, you know, has turned into sort of like his MO. He always seems to be involved in these scandals. Nothing ever seems to always add up 100%. And like you say, he can also use the paper as a mouthpiece to do that bidding. If bad reports come out about him in one paper, he can use the Las Vegas Review Journal to sort of combat those. You know, and I think a lot of it is just like we don't understand what he is going to do. You know, using his past papers as precedents, it seems like that is, you know, sort of his MO is using it to further his bidding. And I think here this is, you know, another example of things that he can potentially do. You know, to bolster his own profile, which, you know, in the national media, I think, has been attacked a good bit based on, you know, some of the decisions he's made, the things that he said, you know, and I think that, you know, it's just another opportunity for him to have a mouthpiece.
I think as troubling in one sense as him having a mouthpiece to give his point of view on you know, whatever, also the idea that he could keep the paper from saying certain things, particularly about him. In the previous segment before the break, I talked about this situation in Ohio, in Bowling Green, where the editor of that paper was published because seemingly she wanted to write an anti-NRA editorial. She didn't run it, actually, because the publisher said no. But then she showed it to her staff members, and simply for that she was fired. So publishers and owners can hold a lot of weight at these newspapers, and specifically at the Review Journal, they report today that Adelson has twice filed lawsuits over comments about him that appeared in Las Vegas-based publications. They write that both of those lawsuits were eventually dismissed, but not before one action actually bankrupted a Las Vegas Review Journal columnist by the name of John L. Smith, who had written about Adelson in a book. Is there just as much reason to believe here that he might want to buy the largest paper in Nevada to keep them from reporting on him?
Absolutely. Well, I guess as the old adage goes, if you can't beat him, buy him. So in this case, he's certainly done that. And, you know, I mean, if you look at the way that the reporting was done, just to figure out that he was the owner, mm-hmm. I mean, with the opportunity for him to be at the helm and then to start, you know, taking over and making sure that reporters are doing his bidding, the kind of dogged investigative reporters that were essential in figuring out that he was the owner might be the first on the chopping block, right? Because those are the kind of people he doesn't want snooping around,
sure.
Especially if there's disgruntled employees when they have the kind of resources that they have and at least the ability to, you know, do some of this stuff already. So I definitely think that there's a concern there that he could be trying to silence, you know, the paper in a way. And again, like, to keep it in frame, this is the biggest paper in Nevada. So when you're silencing members of this paper, you're silencing a very large voice, and you know, some of the best, most astute political reporters in the state. So sometimes in California or Washington D.C. or New York, we forget that Nevada is a very, very small place comparatively.
Yeah, it is. And don't forget about the idea of self-censorship by journalists who work at the paper, who may now be, you know, even if they don't tell them, hey, don't write about Adelson, but, you know, people who may be concerned about their job, why do I need to go into this piece that conflicts with the owner's interest? Let me just write about something else, and you end up with this self-censorship at this very powerful paper. Okay, very quickly, he apparently Adelson is also a great big Islamophobe.
He is indeed, yes. He has said things like, not all Islamists are terrorists, but all terrorists are Islamists. He's talked about how the Muslims want to kill 100% of the Jews. He has talked about the fact that there's no Palestinian alive who wasn't raised on a curriculum of hatred and hostility towards the Jews. And he has reportedly supported an anti-Muslim film called Obsession. And I think given the political climate today and the way that some of our media outlets are already describing Islam, describing Muslims in America, handing the keys over to Adelson and allowing his paper to, again, potentially become a mouthpiece for this sort of thing, should put some fear in the American public as people who want objective journalism. And it's unclear, you know, kind of what he's going to be able to do with the paper. But if it is, again, like in the way that he's taken on his other papers, I think there might be some scary outcomes.
There, all terrorists are Islamists, as he said. That may come as a surprise to the people of Colorado Springs who saw their Planned Parenthood shot up about just over a week ago, I guess, at this point, by someone who is decidedly not a Muslim, but is a Christianist, a Christian terrorist, or the folks out, you know, at the church shooting in Charleston earlier this year, South Carolina, and on it goes. 150 cases of hate crimes just since San Bernardino out here in Southern California alone. Hate crimes and threats and so forth against Muslims out here. All right, Adelson is committed to crushing labor unions to dust. Well, that's disturbing in a town like, in a big union town like Las Vegas.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, so one of the things that we write about in the piece is a story was from a 1999 culinary workers, protest. They stood out front of one of his casinos and, were protesting the fact that he is so terrible on unions. He tried to get the cops to start making arrests. The cops obviously were not going to do that because that was ridiculous, and probably many of them are also union members, but shouldn't tell Adelson that.
Right.
And apparently one of the officials in the union at the time was telling a story, and these security guards kept trying to criticize him, saying he was on public property and that if he didn't move, he was going to be put under citizen's arrest. And it happened, this sort of happened over and over and over again. And that actually prompted Rep. John Lewis, mm-hmm. Who is a civil rights hero, who is in town for the rally, saying that the incident reminded him of living in the South during Jim Crow. So again, that's just scary that his use of anti-union tactics actually goes down to making someone who was in the civil rights movement and was injured during the civil rights mm-hmm. movement fear again in the same way. And that I think should say something about his tactics.
We talked a little bit about I'm speaking with Sal Calalori of Media Matters for America. We talked a little bit about other, wealthy political families and billionaires who own newspapers. And so forth, and media outlets. Is this any more troubling as you, because I'm trying to gauge how disturbed I should or shouldn't be by this. Does Adelson have any radio or TV interests, public air, you know, does he own any of our public airwaves? And is this any more troubling, for example, than right-wing corporations like Mitt Romney's Bain Capital buying up Clear Channel, which is now called iHeartMedia, which, you know, basically he took over the majority of the nation's public airwaves just before he ran for president. That was disturbing. So how do you see this here? Is Adelson involved in our public airwaves? And is it any more troubling than that control that right-wing media, frankly, has over millions, hundreds of millions of Americans every day?
Yeah, I'm actually not 100% sure if Adelson has any other media interests in terms of television and airwaves. And, you know, again, he may, looking at this incident, which happened to be highly publicized, there's a potential that he might have bought up smaller companies and corporations, you know, using smaller media entities, using, you know, go between corporations like this, and that's actually a kind of a pattern that happens where, you know, a lot of shell corporations will open up, big donors who don't want their names associated will open through that, and then they will start to sort of manage newspapers you know, radio and television outlets without actually having to disclose. I think in this case, he thought he was going to get away with it, and he got caught. So, you know, I think anytime anybody purchases a paper or a media outlet, you have to be skeptical. You know, obviously at Media Matters, we're always skeptical of, mm-hmm. of pretty much anything that goes on in media. But I think in this case, it's, you know, it shouldn't be just you're going to judge the person based on their worth or millionaires, billionaires, and things like that. But looking at the actions that they've taken before, if they are not first-time media buyers, and also when these media entities do start getting rolling under their leadership, holding them accountable. The scary part is that people don't know, right? And if it wasn't for the fact that you know, Las Vegas Review-Journal really tried to expose its own owner, which, yes. again, as you pointed out, is ridiculous.
It's bizarre,
We might not know. And if we don't know and readers don't know and things start happening and the paper starts changing and viewpoints are said, there's a huge lack of disclosure. And I think that lack of disclosure plays into, you know, a lot of the things that we see in mainstream media. People going on television, not disclosing their ties, not disclosing their funding, and a lot of that, you know, plays a role in objective journalism. And, you know, the way the media works in this country, I think people do have the expectation, or the hope at the very least, that media is going to be fair and accurate. And when you don't know the biases behind the owners, behind the publishers, I think that really hurts the American people's ability to trust media. And in many ways, they just feel it's become another politicized entity. And we already know how the politicized entities in this country are faring in the polls, which is, say, pretty low.
Yeah. Finally, Sal, the Adelson family put out this statement in the Review-Journal today after, you know, alongside this really long, lengthy, well-reported piece trying to figure out who bought the newspaper. They go ahead and put out a statement saying, yeah, we did it. They write, we understand the desire of hardworking staff at the RJ and others in the community to know the identity of the paper's new owners, and it was always our intention to publicly announce our ownership of the RJ this week with each of the Republican candidates for president and the national media descending on Las Vegas for the year's final debate. We did not want an announcement to distract from the important role Nevada continues to play in the 2016 presidential election. Our motivation for purchasing the RJ is simple. We believe in this community, and we want to make Las Vegas an even greater place to live. Now, do you buy that explanation that they didn't want to distract from the debate? And B, is there any history that you're aware of this sort of secretly buying up a huge media outlet? I mean, it just seems so bizarre to even imagine that they thought they could actually get away with it. That just doesn't seem possible.
Right. I mean, given Adelson and his family's history, no, I clearly don't believe them. But, you know, I think part of it is that the fact that this really has never actually happened in this way before that I'm aware of. I mean, you know, in a lot of instances, most people want to proclaim on the top of the hills that they've bought media, right?
Sure.
And for them, it's like a big, proud thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of the other media entities that, you know, we discussed earlier, you are able to know who those owners are because they are very, very forward about their purchases mm-hmm. and their properties, right? So I think it's just a really odd situation, and that's why I think so many people are still trying to wrap their heads around it. Clearly, it had nothing to do with the debate. I mean, if you were worried about the, 15th Republican debate, I mean, you could have announced a couple of days later. I mean, there's so many other things going on here at play that, and the multiple days of waiting and literally having the paper that you just purchased try and investigate you, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. You know, and I think that a lot of the professional journalist societies, you know, I was just reading an article earlier about the Society of Professional Journalists and the American Society of News Editors were pressuring the owners to go public because, again, you know, their point is journalism is about transparency. And when you get rid of the transparency in journalism, you are hurting the American people and the reader's ability to know what is going on. So I don't really trust them, but I can tell you that we'll be watching and we'll be reading. And you know, if this paper continues to do what some of Adelson's other properties have done, I think you know we'll definitely be making sure that they're held accountable for their actions. And especially now that they're outed and we can actually put you know a face to this faceless corporation, you know, I think that there's definitely going to be some opportunities for people to start really getting in on the paper and making sure that they're upholding some journalistic standards.
And it's a scary face in more ways than one. Salvatore Calalori, a program director for Media Matters State Media Team. Thank you for bringing some much needed clarity to this bizarre mystery that is still a bit of a mystery, but we will rely on you over at Media Matters to keep your eyes on the Las Vegas Review-Journal to see if they begin the steep decline that many of us fear. Thank you, Sal. Really appreciate you coming by today. And just to make Fox News crazy, happy holidays, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on, and same to you.
You bet. All right, a quick break, and we are back with more Bradcast, including the Green News Report right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. Stay tuned. There's going to be a lot of melting going on this holiday season.
Oh, yeah.
If the weather reports is correct. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Desi Doyen, I introduced you on our last thrilling episode before the our coverage of the GOP debate this week, and I introduced you, said hello, and then I don't know if we heard from you for the rest of the program.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think you guys had it very well covered.
Well, yeah, we did in that, of course, Heather Digby Parton was great. Hal Sparks was great. If you missed our analysis, go back and download it at bradblog.com. But the other reason was because there were little or no environmental issues that came up in the Republican debate. And of course, that's not the only thing you talk about, but we like to talk about the debates and the green coverage with you. And in this case, well, there wasn't much to talk about it, so it was all saved for our latest Green News Report.
The biggest problem this world has today is not President Obama with global warming, which is inconceivable. This is what he's saying.
Republicans hold another presidential primary debate on national security, but skip right over energy and climate change. House Republicans lift oil export ban. 90% of disasters are caused by extreme weather. Plus, November 2015 was the hottest November on record.
Well, that's getting disturbingly predictable. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We need to take an offensive approach by using our energy.
Well, that would be offensive, Governor Huckabee.
Our energy, the one weapon we have.
Our energy is the one weapon we have? Really? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, just 3 days after nearly 200 governments from around the world adopted an historic agreement in Paris to finally take action on climate change, the GOP holds a debate and no one mentions that largest worldwide agreement ever.
Yeah, it was really remarkable. You'd think they would cover this major international agreement in a debate about international relations,
yeah,
but...
especially since it has to do with national security.
That debate, hosted by CNN on Tuesday in Las Vegas, was indeed focused on foreign policy and national security, but CNN moderators asked zero questions on climate change, energy, or even the Paris Agreement. Now, in the undercard debate, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee brought it up himself.
We ought to be drilling every bit of oil, getting all the coal out. We need to be going after our natural gas and biofuels and become the energy exporter to the world. We need to take an offensive approach by using our energy, the one weapon we have. The president thinks that climate change is the number one enemy. I think people bombing us is a bigger enemy than the temperature change over several hundred years.
Never mind that we have infinite energy coming from the sky and that the U.S. is already a leader in exporting new clean energy technology.
What does Mike Huckabee want us to do? Pollute them to death?
Apparently. Ohio Governor John Kasich ridiculed the landmark Paris Agreement and the world's focus on the existential threat of climate change impacts on human civilization.
And when I see they have a climate conference over in Paris, they should have been talking about destroying ISIS because they are involved in virtually every country, you know, across this world. Now,
oh, I love that. Let's criticize Paris for not being tough enough on terror.
Billionaire Donald Trump disagrees with both Kasich and Huckabee, however.
The biggest problem this world has today is not President Obama with global warming, which is inconceivable. This is what he's saying. The biggest problem we have today is nuclear proliferation, and having some maniac, having some madman go out and get a nuclear weapon.
A madman, a maniac, going out and getting a nuclear weapon? Is that an argument against voting for Donald Trump?
I guess so. And also keep in mind that the Defense Department called climate change a national security threat in a report issued just in July. Polls show that two-thirds of Americans support U.S. action on climate change. So it's really curious why the CNN moderators chose to ignore those facts and ignore the landmark Paris Agreement.
Because
this is CNN.
Meanwhile, during the debate, Congress reached a deal to fund the government through September, and that includes a provision long sought by the oil industry to end the 40-year-old ban on exporting U.S. crude oil. The ban, which has been in place since the Arab oil embargo of the 1970s. In exchange for lifting the oil export ban, Democrats got a 5-year extension on tax credits for the wind and solar industries. Now, while that tax credit is crucial for the renewable energy industry. By the way, the oil industry's tax breaks are permanent and have been in place for 100 years.
So renewables have to go in every couple of years and beg for help.
Yes.
Meanwhile, the government picks winners and losers by choosing to subsidize oil, coal, and natural gas permanently.
Finally, the world just had its hottest November ever recorded globally.
Oh, don't tell the Republicans. They say it's getting colder.
Well, that's according to NASA, which also says that 2015 is virtually locked in to be the hottest year on record. And speaking of national security, a new United Nations report finds that 90% of major disasters around the world are caused by extreme weather. And the United States is in the top 5 countries with the highest number of disasters.
Well, when people die from disasters, apparently that is not a national security threat. That's just, hey, that's life. For much more on all of the stories we covered today and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shot down in May. But I know I'm...
Well, so November was the hottest November on record.
Right.
October before it was the hottest October on record.
Yep.
And 2015 on track to be the hottest year ever.
Unless something crazy, and I hope something crazy doesn't happen in December, that, yeah, there's no way that it can't be the hottest year on record.
Well, last year, remember, the polar vortex was pushed down from the Arctic down, and the only place really that was cold all winter was the Northeast, where the American media happened to be and where Congress is, and they were able to say, well, see, that's evidence. It's freezing here. Clearly, there's...
Yeah, remember the snow in Buffalo, the snowpocalypse in Buffalo, how they had like 20 feet
or
something?
Yeah. So they used that, and a senator, what's his name? What's his dumb... came on the Senate floor with
James Inhofe
yes, your friend
of Oklahoma.
James Inhofe came and said, look, it's a snowball. So obviously there is no global warming. Of course, they were in the only place that was cold across the entire globe was right there in the Northeast. Well, now things are different as December is shaping up to be the warmest December on record, even in the Northeast. Miles Grant over at FAIR writes that much of the East Coast and Midwest have seen record-breaking December warmth. Through December 12, nearly 700 warm records have been set, according to the National Centers for Environmental Information. A series of cities broke records over the weekend, from Mississippi to Wisconsin to New York. On Saturday, Cleveland shattered its high temperature records by 7 degrees. And then on Sunday, Philadelphia broke its record by 6 degrees. And Dubuque, Iowa, 943 miles to the west of Philly, broke its record by 5 degrees. On Monday, Buffalo hit an incredible 71 degrees. 71 degrees in Buffalo, New York.
I know, it smashed the old record by something like nearly 10 degrees.
Well, yeah, actually destroying the old record of 64. So it was, 7 degrees. The extended warm spell has left Buffalo with no snow to date, breaking the previous record for latest snow of December 3. That dates back to the 1800s. Buffalo usually sees its first measurable snow by November 8, but there is still no snow in the long-range forecast for Buffalo. The cycle has become even more has even become self-sustaining. Without snow on the ground, the feeble December sun can warm things up much more efficiently, reports Eric Holdhouse over at Slate. Miles Grant says it's too early to determine December's place in the record books, but 2015 is on pace to be the warmest year on record. October marked the sixth consecutive month of global, monthly global temperature record being broken, and was also the greatest departure from average for any month in the 1,630 months of record keeping, according to NOAA.
Buckle up.
Yep, buckle up. So that was October, then November, and now December. At least it's warm in the Northeast. I hope they're enjoying it. I hope that makes the media and, your friend Senator Jim Inhofe noticed that, Houston, we've got a problem here. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to our booking goddess, Cynthia Cohn, to Salvatore Collalori of Media Matters for America. Check out their work at mediamatters.org. Until we meet again, you can find me on the Facebooks and the Twitters. I am The Brad Blog. You can drop me email, bradcast@bradblog.com. And you can download any and all of our episodes for free at bradblog.com or over at iTunes. All right, that's it for today. Until next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.